two-part series that we'll start today, and the Mitzvah Shem will try to continue tomorrow. And the goal over here is we're constantly in what the Baal Musar would call the Melchamas HaYetzer. The Silas Yisharim is famous in the early Prakim when he introduces the point of the Sefer and really the point of the life of a human being. He says that we're constantly living through a Melchama. We exist in a state of warfare because the Yetzer Hara is always on the assault, and therefore our only defensive is to engage in that Melchama. And every decision, every choice a person makes, whether it be in Torah, in mitzvot, even in, we'll call the Divrei HaRishus, the so-called optional aspects of life that that revolve around the person's preferences and personal lifestyle choices, ultimately fall somewhere into this great Melchama of the Yetzer Hara. And the way to try to understand how we successfully wage that war is to understand our enemy. You can't really fight a war unless you have a scouting report, unless you have intelligence, unless you have a sense of what you're facing. And that's going to be our goal. Again, based on the Sefer Kol Dodi that we referenced earlier in the Zman, the collection of the Shmuzin of Rav Shlomo Shvadron, the Magid of Yerushalayim. So he begins with a pasuk that appears in Eicha. Tumasa bishuleha lo zachra b'acharisa, batirid ploim ein menachem lo. That's the beginning of the pasuk. Tumasa bishuleha, it's describing the destruction of Yerushalayim. It's describing the downfall of Klal Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim in the time of the Churban. Eicha was authored, was compiled and put together by the Navi Yirmiyahu, who was, of course, known as the Navi of the Churban of Yerushalayim, the first base of Mikdash. So he describes Tumasa b'shuleha, the Tuma, the decadence and the defilement, the Averos and the impurity that led to the Churban is b'shuleha. Shuleha me'il, the ends, the bottom of a garment, of a coat. Shuleha means the underside of something. Sometimes we refer to the shulei hakedera, where it talks about how the shulei hakedera gets burnt up, the bottom of a pot becomes black from perpetually being on the fire. Ozachar b'charisa, she did not remember her end, v'tir ploim, and as a result, she fell unfathomably low. Tered ploim, like a pellet, something unbelievable. So what is this expression? Why tumasa b'shuleha? What is the pasuk trying to help us understand better about the process of chait and the Melchama with the Yetzer Hara by emphasizing that the tuma is b'shuleha, at its bottom, at its end? So he gives the following mashal, and you can adjust it, you can modernize it however you want, but these are the terms that he uses. Reuven sees his friends in shul. In a brand new palace. I'm sorry?
What's Bishulaha again? Sorry to interrupt.
Bishulaha, the bottom. Shulaim, the bottom of something. Okay? So Reuven sees his friend in Shul in a brand new handmade palace. And it's so beautiful. So covered Shabbos thick. That Shimon wants to get the same one for himself. So he finds out where Reuven bought it. And Reuven tells him the name of the manufacturer. So there's only two. One of them is left. I bought the first one. It's very expensive, but go there and you'll find there's one more talus left that's available to buy. So Shimon isn't fazed by the price. He wants this talus, goes to the manufacturer and buys it, a $300 talus. At the counter, when he's paying them for the talus, they tell him, okay, this is a talus, it's your size, it's perfect, enjoy it, just go upstairs to the woman on the second floor in the sewing room. She's going to put a hem around the edges because, after all, this is a handcrafted garment, and it's important to reinforce it. She'll do it for you. Just give her a $5 tip. That's all, and you'll be good to go. Now, Shimon is very wrapped up with his purchase, which cost him $300. He doesn't have any patience for these petty things. Oh, come on, I paid $300 for the talus. So he's not interested in shelling out another $5 for some hem. He probably, it's just a gimmick to try to nickel and dime me. Put on another fee, another surcharge. I already paid $300 for it. I'm not wasting my time. Just the whole thing is just a joke. So he comes to school next week, very proud of this new purchase. And pretty soon he sees that just after a few weeks, few months, the talus that he paid so much money for is slowly unraveling at the edge of the fabric. At first he doesn't pay too much attention to it, just a little frayed edge. It's not so unusual, but after a few weeks, a few weeks more, he sees that the whole thing is falling apart and the stitches and the weave is literally coming apart. He complains to Reuven. He says, I don't understand. I get the same talus as you. What's the pshat? How come your talus looks just like the day you bought it, and mine is becoming a shmata? So she says to Shem, I don't know. Go back to the manufacturer. He paid you good money. Ask the ones you bought it from. So he goes back and gives him a piece of his mind, and he shows them the talus, and they respond to him, sir, we told you that you need to put on the head. You left in a huff, convinced that it was a waste of your time, a waste of your money. The whole thing was a gimmick. But now you're seeing the result of your own irresponsible choice. We told you what you needed to do. Just get a few more, take a few more minutes, put a hem on the tiles, and you'll be fine. Don't complain to us. It's not our fault. We told you what you needed to do, and you couldn't shell out the extra $5. Shimon leaves ashamed and dejected, and obviously very, very remorseful that he didn't do what he was supposed to do when he was supposed to do it. That's the mashma. So the Maggid says that sometimes we experience a yirida in our avodas Hashem. Maybe it's more often than we want, but we ask ourselves, what happened? I know at the beginning of this month, at the beginning of the year, at a different point, I had more chizuk, I had more commitment, and I just don't feel like I did anything to actively bring myself down, but yet this is where I found myself. This is where I found myself. But so what happened? What happened? Where did that go? So with this mashal, we can put some perspective on the way the Yetzer Hara works and how he attempts to outsmart us. Is he smart? He's much smarter than us. He's been around the block. He's a lot more experienced. And he's got a lot of tricks. We've learned his tricks. We may not always be able to turn the tables, but the Ikaros Hashem wants us not to ever give up. Sometimes one instance of overcoming the Yetzer Hara is enough to propel us and to generate maybe even a sufficient tzchus for us to win the war, to get the siyata d'shmaya, even if we end up losing some of the battles. So think of yourself for a moment, and we'll call it your spiritual portfolio, so to speak. Like a garment, like a talus. It's a fabric. It's a fabric, right? So now, if you have a big hole in your talus, you're going to deal with it right away. If there's a nail sticking out of the desk that you're sitting in, right? So you're going to remove the nail as soon as possible to protect your pants from getting caught and tearing. But if we're talking about the ends of your garment, the bottom of your pants, not necessarily going to be paying as much attention to that very, very end of the pant leg, let's say, right? You know, you see sometimes a person can have a pant leg that's frayed or torn a little bit because he wears na'od or clogs or something, and he's stepping on his pant legs and they get torn. You know, you can get away with that. It's just fine. You don't pay so much attention. But if I have a hole in my pants, I'm going to deal with it right away, right? So if the Yetzer Hara would approach you with a head-on attack and try to tempt you to poke a serious hole in your avodas Hashem, to try to convince you to make a major, major shift or downgrade in your service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Be'ezus Hashem, you defeat him, right? You would know that you're being tested. You would know that you're in the spotlight, that you are at showtime right now, and the focus, the cameras are on you to make the right decision. You wouldn't even let them get close. When you're challenged to do the right thing, and it's so obvious to you that taking the other path is a mistake, So you're on guard and you're able to handle that. It's a straight up threat. You push back and you're strong enough to overcome. Right? That's why, if you're calling the plays in a football game, so you want to come up with some sort of sneak attack. Because if the quarterback just takes the ball and just runs straight, so the line of defense is there to stop him. Okay? He needs to fake. He needs to look like he's gonna throw the pass. And then while everyone's looking downfield, then he's going to make a break for it, and he's going to run, right? Because if the head-on attack, everyone knows to expect it, and everyone knows we got to push back. But the Yetzer Hara knows that that's not where to focus his energies, on the head-on attack. Instead, he's got to bring on the guerrilla warfare. He attacks the edges, the hem of the garment, where the guard is down, where I'm not as quick to respond or even to notice. And if you do notice a little bit, you think, okay, it's just nothing, it's fine, it's not a big deal. It gets you to compromise. This is a Kirovo saying. The key strategy of the Yetzer Hara is that it gets you to compromise on challenges that are your weak spot, where your action might be, come on, does it really matter so much? That's just an extra. I paid my $300. I'm doing the real thing that I'm really supposed to do. I have my nice, fresh, smooth towels. I don't need to worry about all the extras, all those bonus points. Because the bonus points, that's not really where it's at. Yeah, okay, I showed up a little late to davening today, but I came to davening. I know a lot of people didn't come to davening at all, right? Maybe in yeshiva I didn't show up late to davening, but okay, but I did what I was supposed to do. I came, I put on my tefillin. I took care of the ikar. So I had to skip a little psukah de zimra. All right, not a big deal. You know, they probably just created psukah de zimra anyway for the old retired guy in shul who isn't going anywhere today and he has lots of time. I know that I'm yotze with Baruch Sha'amar and Ashra Yishtav. Those are the main things, right? There's so many examples of that where we sort of rationalize in our mind, this is really what Hashem wants from me. Hashem doesn't really care about the extra stuff, right? So I don't really need to worry about the extra, even if I do it every day, but you know, on the days that I fall short, it's not such a big deal. We can concoct all kinds of various justifications, countless examples of that. Sometimes the more halacha we learn, ironically, the more we're able to justify why our leniencies really make sense. Some say that's a pshat, al-chit shachatan al-fanacha b'flilos, in judgment, because we make judgments that end up being more makel on ourselves. I can justify coming late to Seder or missing Seder. It's true in kashrus. It's true in our the choices we make in social interactions, choices of entertainment. It's true in our decorum in shul. You know, just like, I don't talk in shul, but you know, if a guy comes over to me in the middle of chazar shachatz, so I'll, you know, like I'm nodding my head, I'll acknowledge, I'll respond, you know, barely, not really talking, you know, but the Yetzer Hara chips away little bit to our sensitivity is eroded. And that's the danger. That's the danger, because that's the key to where his attacks start. The extras that we think are above and beyond are often not really extras at all. The concept of siyag, the concept of having a protective fence, isn't simply that it should continue to be viewed as a protective fence, because if we were only working with that mindset, the result is that we think, okay, if the fence fell down, okay, but as long as what's inside is protected, because it's not protected anymore. When the gedarim, when the outside protection is no longer effective. Because the proof is that when we do compromise, even a little bit from the standard we should be holding ourselves to, it is a slippery slope. The garment begins to unravel little by little, even when we don't realize that it's happening. And if we don't see those edges and protect those lines as lines of defense, the fabric is going to unravel. And once the garment unravels, it's very, very hard to put it back together again. But both sides, bottom line, job one, more than anything else, is to have the awareness of how the Yetzer Hara works and how he works within our system, within our own consciousness or subconsciousness. And we can't combat the Yetzer Hara without knowing how he operates. But it's that little voice that says, okay, you know, it's not such a big deal, not such a big deal. Because he's not going to attack us on the big deals. He's not going to attack us on the big deals. And when he is attacking us on the big deals, we know that it's the Yetzer Hara coming at us and we know how to respond. The more we discover through Chazal, the Baal and Musar, what the strategies of the Yetzer Hara are, the more we can protect our position, plan ahead, and know when we are being attacked, even if the attacks seem more subtle the otherwise unsuspecting Jew. So keep that in mind. Keep in mind not to only be fazed by the head-on attacks, but to be more sensitive to when we feel like something a little bit slipped, grab onto it and fix it and attack it right there. Don't let yourself just say, okay, whatever, you know, it's not such a big deal, because that can be sometimes the gateway, the access point. The Yetzer Hara gets his foot in the door without us even being aware of it. And before we know it, look back, and things are beyond our reach. It's a lot harder to fix it at that point. Okay.